Are you ready, Alabama?
All the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
loved the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
According to Plainsman Preston, he says the Gwinnett Braves are seriously considering changing their name to the Sweet Tea. So that's why he threw that Sweet Tea in there. It could be the Gwinnett Sweet Tea. I think that would be a cool name. I think that would be really a neat name. Who knows? We'll see where the story goes. We'll see when Arky Shea is ready to move from 98% certain that the deal is going down to 100% certain. And then he'll get a hold of Matt Scalise and the crew at AL.com. See, I don't believe anything I don't read at AL.com. See, Arky went on the radio and said that earlier today, that it's 98% certain now that the Bay Bears are going to be bought and moved to Huntsville. 98%. So I immediately went to AL.com. I don't see it on AL.com. If it's not AL.com, I'm not buying it yet. Matt Scalise joins us from AL.com or from the beach. You know, who knows? Maybe he had a 2-week vacation. Matt, welcome in. How are you? Uh-oh. Do we lose Matt? Talk to me, Matt.
You got me?
Oh, now I got you. Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. All right, man. Are you back from the beach or what? I mean, it's first day of practice at Alabama. You can't be at the beach now.
No, it's very different from the beach. It's rainy here today, and there's some football happening at least. But, yeah, it's the hard reality has set in of the season.
I don't know what the heck has been going on with that rain that you guys have had in the Birmingham area the last – week or so. I saw pictures of trucks floating down the road and under bridges and flooding and everything. We didn't get any of that in North Alabama. I mean, it's just a weird deal. Usually we get something. We're 70 miles from you.
I will tell you, if you're coming to Tuscaloosa for a practice or for fan day this weekend, you need to be aware of that because of the summer we've had here, there are now mosquitoes basically control this territory. This is their land now.
Yeah, I could see that happening. All right. By the way, as you may have heard me there, our own Arky Shea, talking to sources close to him that he won't reveal, but that's okay. He's saying that everything is in the works now, that this Mobile Bay Bear thing to Huntsville is happening. And that the target date is 2019 for the new stadium and all of that. So it's going to be a story there. I mean, it gets lost in this, it's fall ball now is underway, but it looks like it's going to happen, man.
Yeah, it certainly has seemed to be heading in that direction for a while now. I think it makes sense. I'm sure the folks in Mobile are bummed about it, but Pensacola as a team, it's not far away. And I think Huntsville obviously was the market that, there's so much growth up there economically and population-wise that it makes sense, I think, for somebody to bring a team back there. I'm sure that as soon as everything's finalized, we will have a report on it on AL.com, but it certainly seems to be heading in that direction.
Yeah, it does seem to be going that way. All right. Of course, the practice reports, you've got to get these practice reports in with the limited amount of time that the guys get to go down there and watch some practice. And Michael Casagrande reporting the proverbial what position guys are in the line. Do you think the players know that the fans and the media kind of calculate where guys are in the line to see if in any way, shape, or form that determines their pecking order? Because I know we never did that when I coached. It would have never met. Okay, one, two, three, you're the first, you're the second, you're the fourth. It was just get in line. Guys would pick each other out. They'd go matchups. But it was never really about depth, you know, where you were in line in an individual drill.
I think that we've learned from watching practice under Nick Saban that he does care about lining guys up in certain groups. He calls them organizational groups. Look, they do change and they evolve. We always report on when they change and when different guys are out there in different combinations. For the most part, they're a pretty good indicator of where things are at a given moment. And when you see a group of five offensive linemen out there together, and you know that,
that would be
three or four of them are returning starters, you can make a pretty safe bet that that's what your starting offensive line is right now. And it could change later, but that's probably what it is at the moment.
Yeah. No, that would definitely be a good indicator because those guys like to run together and do stuff like that together. I'm just saying when it's a one-on-one, you know, a receiver and a DB, you know, that kind of stuff type of deal. Now, we shouldn't read anything into the fact that Deshaun Hand was on the field, right? Because that is not necessarily related to whatever might happen with the DUI.
He is not suspended from the team. He has never at any point been. So that has in the past not affected the way guys practice. It should not be taken as an indicator of whether or not he will play against Florida State. So, yeah, he was out there apparently running with the first group at defensive line today. But, again, I wouldn't read much into that if you're talking about whether he's going to face on-field discipline or not.
You know, I'm a guy that's hard on this. You know, I think this is an automatic game suspension type of stuff. But then as the story evolved, I mean, the fact that there was no D in the DUI, and most people think it's going to end up being a public intoxication type of deal. And his record means something. I mean, the fact that he's an all SEC academic guy 2 years in a row, the fact that he's on the student athlete council, I think that stuff has got to mean something. And I'm starting to come to the conclusion that he's gonna pay some price internally. I don't think he's gonna miss a game.
It wouldn't shock me. Again, he's not a repeat offender at Alabama. Doesn't have any, at least publicly known, off-field incidents. And, you know, I think the other thing, as you mentioned, you know, Alphonse Taylor had a similar situation to this last year where the initial report came in, he was arrested for a DUI, and that charge was ultimately reduced and went away. And those things happen, you know, as the course of an investigation plays out and lawyers get involved and evidence comes to light. Just because somebody gets arrested for something doesn't mean that the charge is gonna follow all the way through and into a conviction. And that's important to remember. I know that people want to jump all over these guys when they get arrested, but that's not the end of the judicial process. It's not. So for all we know, this whole incident hasn't seen its conclusion yet. It may not result in a DUI charge for Deshaun Hand. I think that's part of why Nick Saban doesn't immediately jump out there and say, here's what the final word is on discipline for this incident that just happened last night. He wants to wait and let things play out and see what all the evidence is and what all the information is. So, yeah, look, right now I wouldn't be surprised either way, but I certainly would not say that an arrest with no trial or conviction necessarily means an automatic suspension.
And there are so many different motivations for people that want to jump on. First, you got the haters, and they're going to jump on Saban and look at this as a flaw of his, that he's always soft on it. We don't know all of the ins and outs of it, and there has to be some sort of benefit for being a good guy in the program. You got to build up some kind of equity. He needs to send that message to the team that, look, if you're a good character and you make a mistake, it might be this way. And we don't know why Geno Smith was suspended for a game on his first DUI and wasn't suspended on his second DUI. We just don't know all of the workings of that part. And then you've got the media members who want to just jump on him. And, because it's clickbait stuff, you know, it's a great thing to be able to say that Nick Saban is soft, you know, if you want to, cause you got to look for something to tear a guy down. And then you got guys that some people might say that I'm going the other way because, I favor Alabama. Oh, that's cause the big dog favors Alabama. So he's not going to say. So it's very difficult when everybody wants to critique how a guy handles something. Well, we don't know. Like Jim Moore once said, we think we know, but we really don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes. We want to know. We don't need to know. We want to know.
Right. I mean, ultimately, the reason why fans care about whether a guy is disciplined over an off-field incident or not, it has to do with sport, okay? We don't get this fired up about a normal guy that works at the 7-Eleven down the street getting a DUI. Nobody cares what happens to him or not. There might be a few people. There might be Mothers Against Drunk Driving that get fired up about it. But the people who get mad about football players being disciplined or not are absolutely being influenced by their desire to see a certain outcome in a football game. I think that's pretty absurd and ridiculous, but that's part of the sport, part of the game. And I think these guys understand, or at least they should understand, that they're held to a much higher standard than their fellow students are. One of the many reasons why we might should consider treating football players, college football players, a little bit different than normal students, because they don't experience things in remotely the same way as a normal student.
That's a good point, too. Matt Scalise with us from AL.com. Now, I asked this question because of something that came up at Texas that I'll touch on in a moment, but I'm trying to remember. Nick Saban, I know he's going to speak to the press after the game or after practice today, and a couple of players will be available, but he doesn't do the battlefield scrum with the reporters, does he? Does he always address the media in the room where he's at the podium, or does he do this little scrum on the field where everybody's like crowding in on him and sticking things in his face and everything and wanting him to, you know, answer questions?
No, he does not do that when they're in Tuscaloosa. There may be occasions where he's done that at certain public events, but anytime they're in Tuscaloosa after a practice, after a game, whatever, it is a very formal process. He stands behind a podium. You wait your turn for a microphone. You don't just go free for all. It is extremely organized, and it's always been that with Nick Saban. Yeah,
yeah. And the reason I asked that, I'm sure by now you saw a story or heard the story about Tom Herman. After practice today, a notice came out from the SID at Texas, instructing people that in the post-practice interview with Coach Herman that no one is to stand behind Coach. They don't want anybody standing, but they have people all around him in a circle, and you could see in a video they're trying to move the people around him when everybody in front of him, which I thought was a little Captain Queeg-ish, but, you know, I kind of get that. You know, it might be disconcerting having people reach over your shoulder with a recorder. But the other part of that, and you could speak to this being in the business, they asked that no one tweet or use any social media to post any commentary during the presser. That everybody wait till the whole thing is done so that there's full context and that so that they can reread their tweets or whatever. And whatever they're posting to social media, that they do it post press conference. Now, I don't know how they're going to enforce that, if they're going to look at it and ban somebody if they go ahead and start tweeting stuff during the deal. But, you know, That's kind of the nature of the way it works. You guys do it, everybody does it, where while the press conference is going, there's a lot of social media going out, notices going out during the press conference.
Yeah, it's pretty foolish and unrealistic, and I'm sure they will back off of that. This is the kind of thing that we've seen with a lot of coaches who are coming from a program where they don't get nearly this level of media attention, and going to a program like Texas where you're the center of your local universe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot for Tom Herman to handle. It's a big step up, and I think he's probably having some very strong reactions to it and making blanket rules without actually thinking about the consequences of them or how they might affect the reporters. We've seen it from other coaches that are younger and relatively inexperienced and making a big step up. You know, ultimately, this is a dance that younger coaches do with the media as they try to get comfortable in their role. And, I think in general, learning from how other people do it is probably – I'm not saying you got to do something just because everybody else does it, but learning from other coaches who've done this for a long time, seeing how they do things, It's something that a lot of young coaches would probably benefit from, and I don't think very many of them do it because every coach thinks that he's right about everything. That's why he's a head coach, is because he thinks his way is the only way to do it, and he thinks that his ideas are the best ideas. So I think Tom Herman is probably going to have a bit of a rough first year in terms of his relationship with the media. And, you know, I think probably on the field, you'd better hope that the media doesn't have any reason to say anything critical about him, because when you treat the media badly, they don't necessarily cry any tears for you when it's not going well on the field.
Yeah, it was interesting. I would be interested to know how much of it is actually coming from Herman, because the easy answer to the scrum and people behind you and all of that, just take it inside. Just go to the podium.
Yeah,
just take it inside.
Does Texas not have a media room? I mean, surely you have a podium you can go stand behind to do your press conference.
Right. If you don't want to do that on the field scrum thing, then don't do that. Yeah, just take it inside. I mean, and even in the NFL, they have it. They'll do it against the building, so there's a backdrop behind them, and you can't get behind them. Even if you want to put a podium out at the practice field, you put it against the building and whatnot. You can solve that in a heartbeat. The issue of tweeting during the interview, I thought was kind of interesting, and it almost looked like it was crafted by someone in the media department there, because they were saying things like it's distracting to others and it's distracting to the coach, and you miss the follow up question if you're too busy tweeting out what the coach just said, and then you miss the follow up question, and then you ask the same question again, and so it was kind of interesting. It was almost as if somebody in a communications department got a burr under their saddle. And, you know, about misinformation getting out there or people asking the same questions or whatnot or being distracted.
Yeah, I think in general it sounds like there's some disorganization. And you know, one thing that happens when a coach and his media relations staff aren't on the same page is media takes blame for that. Mm-hmm. You know, reporters generally go into these kinds of events knowing exactly what they're supposed to do and what their job is and you know, what kind of questions they need to ask. Their jobs depend on that. They have to do compelling work or they won't have a job anymore. So, and by the way, when reporters get fired, we don't get a guaranteed salary from whatever contract we signed when we first got it. So what generally happens when there's differences of opinion between the media and the coach is that you had a media relations staff that maybe either didn't have a great policy set up or had some miscommunication issues. And I think this is not all that surprising. Again, for a young coach, a new coach, these kinds of things tend to happen.
Yeah. And finally, with Auburn, you know, they have this opportunity. They have this great history of running backs, and they have this opportunity, you know, with Kerryon Johnson and Cam Petway to, you know, to have another Joe Cribbs, William Andrews, Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown type of scenario, and of course so many other great backs that have played there, but I did think it was kind of interesting just in the last day or two to see comments from Kerryon and Cam that were a little bit different, in as much as Kerryon says, look, I fully expect that we'll have 2 1,000-yard rushers. Cam Petway says his goal is to break Trey Mason's single season rushing record, which is over 1,800 yards. And Gus Malzahn says that Auburn's going to pass the ball more this year. And, of course, everybody's talking about the quarterback, and you know they're going to want to feature Jared Stidham as well. So it's going to be kind of interesting. They got a lot of weapons. That's the good news. But it's something has to give, right? I don't think they have 2,000-yard rushers, and I don't think they have an 1,800-yard rusher. I think they'll have a 1,400-yard rusher, a 700-yard rusher, and a 3,000-yard passer type of deal, and that's probably the best thing for them. But everybody's saying different things that don't quite fit unless they're going to have, you know, 8,000 yards this year amongst them.
Yeah, look, I don't think they brought Jared Stidham in so that they could run the Nick Marshall offense.
Exactly.
You know, I think that the whole point of this was some more balance. And that doesn't mean you can't have 2,000-yard rushers, but I think that, in general, balance seems to have been what Gus Malzahn was going for. We'll see. I think right now you hear a lot of big statements out of everybody in the preseason because there's a lot of excitement and every offense thinks nobody's going to stop them. Every defense thinks they're never going to give up a point. But, you know, when we get into the season, we're going to see what the balance between run and pass looks like for this team. And we're going to see what the pace looks like. And we're going to see, you know, who the go-to guys are, who the hot hands are. And there's a new offensive coordinator who supposedly is going to have a lot of freedom, and we don't know what that looks like yet. So I think there's a lot of questions to be answered about what the offensive identity is actually going to be at Auburn. And there may be different opinions inside Auburn now, but the only one that really matters, at least at the start of the season, is Chip Lindsey. And as it goes on, we'll see if Gus Malzahn starts to impose a little bit more of his own opinion on that.
And I don't know if Cam Pettway was asked by the media what his personal goal for the season was, or if you know, Gus is one of those coaches that asks each member to play. And I, in fact, my son's high school team head coach did that, and he's a very successful coach. And he asked the players for their team goal and their personal goals. And I'd never been, you know, there are no personal goals for a football team. To me, there are zero personal goals. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Nick Saban doesn't ask each member of his team, what's your personal goal for this year? I mean, it better all be a team goal. So I don't know where you know, all of that came from, but it is always interesting when you're going in. The math has to add up, and you're right. Balance, just like 2,000-yard rushers in the NFL, never amount to anything. There's only been one that won a championship out of the 10 or 12 of them that there's been. It's the same thing in college football. You got to have that balance, and they're a better team if they can throw for 3,000 yards and run for 2,000 yards as opposed to having one player, you know, dominate everything, unless it's Cam Newton.
No question.
Yeah. All right, man. Appreciate you. Always great work at AL.com,
yeah.
And we'll look forward to talking again.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. I mean, should you have personal goals? It'd be interesting. I was shocked when I thought it was a trick question. When my son, he had a piece of paper. I said, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm writing down my team goal and my personal goal for the season." And I'm like, "Your personal goal? Where'd that come from?" Well, he says, "Coach Mack asked us. He asked us to put down our team goal and then what our personal goals were." And I said, "What'd you put down as a personal goal?" And I don't know. He put down like 7 touchdowns and X number of yards. He says, "Coach Mack told me that if everything goes the way it should, I shouldn't have any problem, you know, meeting my personal goals." You know, do you have a team goal and a personal goal? I mean, whatever happens on a personal basis happens on a personal basis. But, you know, I don't know that when a player says my personal goal is to have 1,500 yards rushing. Chris Johnson used to drive me crazy with this. You know, 2,000 yards. His goal for 2 years after his 2,000 yards, my personal goal, I want to have a 2,500-yard season. I'm like, if Chris Johnson has a 2,500-yard season, the Titans are 6-10. I mean, you can't, you know, what personal goal? It's not baseball. It's not basketball. What personal goal? They're a better team if he's a 1,400-yard rusher and they have a 4,000-yard passer. My personal goal is to throw for 6,000 yards and, you know, that may not be the answer. All right, when we come back, the newest member of the regular crew. He's been a guest many times before, but now he's a regular. Barry Krause joins us next. Right here at 730, 103.9, Yump.
Are you ready, Alabama? It's time to enter the doghouse.
Carrie Underwood getting the Throwback Thursday treatment today in honor of her husband, Mike Fisher. Retiring Nashville Predators captain Mike Fisher announcing his retirement after a solid 17-year career. Speaking of solid careers, look, Barry Krause, he's a Tide legend. You can't say former Tide legend because he's a current Tide legend. I mean, it'd be like redundant if you said former Tide legend. And, of course, you know him from the goal line stand, one of the great plays in the history of college football, not just in the history of Alabama football, in the history of college football. He went on to play, of course, with the Indianapolis Colts, Cleveland Browns, Miami Dolphins, was a first-round draft pick of the Colts back in the day, and has agreed to join the show on a weekly basis this year. So we're fired up about that. More Barry Krause is always a good thing, and he joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Krause, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm looking forward to working with you and excited about being on your show again.
Yeah, I'm stoked about it. And really what we need to do is we're going to have to – we'll set up a couple of live things that we can do as well. You're only about an hour and change from Huntsville, from North Alabama, where you live over there in Chattanooga now. So, you know, we ought to arrange a couple of big events, and you can come out and join me and do the whole show with me and do some autographs and all that kind of good stuff, and we'll have some fun.
That would be awesome. I'd look forward to it.
All right, let's talk about a couple of things here. First of all, I got to ask you, the helmet that you broke on the goal line stand, do you have that helmet still, or is it in the Bryant Museum? And if it's not, why isn't it in the Bryant Museum?
Well, right now it's in the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame in Birmingham. I was inducted in 07, I gave them my helmet, and I gave the jersey and a bunch of the trophies. So they have most of those things. I would like it eventually to move to Bryant Museum because, you know, that's a real special place in my heart. Love to see it back there. And basically, it's on land, so it's just a matter of logistics of maybe moving it over there. But that's where it is.
All right, so you don't have it. I wasn't sure whether or not you still had it in your possession, because that would be kind of a cool thing to have. But obviously, a lot more people can enjoy it and see it and that bit of history as well. And it's not like one of them things that you could have like a replica made, right? Can you make like a replica cracked helmet? I don't know if you could do that or not.
I don't know if they could do that. Let me tell you this. That helmet was falling apart like you wouldn't believe. You know, it's almost 40 years old. And, you know, just the those nice soft pads are all dried up. And the face mask, basically, I think the clips have broken off. It just doesn't look very good. It's taken its toll, but it was good for, you know, it worked for me. So, you know, hopefully they don't move it around too much because it'll fall apart.
Now, so that was in the day when we had just come out of suspension helmets and then into the first water helmets, and then they were the helmets that had that padding that was like rows of padding and foam and stuff. So which one was it? Is that what it is? Is it one of those padded old Riddell helmets, or was it a suspension helmet? What kind of helmet was it?
It was actually a bike helmet. I had progressed from Riddell. They had these the first couple of years I was playing at Alabama, they give you these Riddell helmets that that would create headaches, headaches, because it was just padding on your head. You know, when you hit, it really didn't even feel like you had a helmet. And I told the coaches, I said, my gosh, this helmet, it just doesn't feel very good. And they go, it's okay. It'll mold your head.
Yeah, right. That's what they used to say. I remember that. They used to say, oh, no, it'll shape around your head. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. Yes. I like the water helmet. The water helmet wasn't bad. It was heavy. Remember the water helmet? Yeah. It was heavy. And then they had the air helmets. You'd be like on the sideline. They'd pump you up a little bit, you know, give you a little extra air and stuff.
Well, I thought that, you know, my senior year, I thought I progressed and really moved up. You know, I got one of those padded helmets, a bike, and basically got bike helmets into the NFL, and they laughed at me. They eventually got rid of those. But that was like, you know, the new thing. So I was able to get a pretty decent helmet my senior year, but it took a long time to do that.
How close do you watch everything that is going on, you know, with the CTE stuff? You played, 10, 11 years in a league and after your career at Alabama. And, you know, we've seen the stories, obviously. I got my youngest son is now finishing up his high school career. I don't know if he's going to go on and play or not. But, you know, so there's always that concern. But how close do you, as an NFL vet, do you watch these stories and get testing done and just kind of make sure you're staying on top of stuff?
I stay on top of it. It's really interesting, some of the research that has come back over the years. One of them just recently came through, I think about less than a week ago, and they were saying that if you played 10 years in the NFL as a linebacker, you basically had over 15,000 hits to your head.
Yeah. You may have had more.
Well, I ended up going into my 12th, 13th year, so I have more than 15,000 hits to the head. Now, the good part was that, you know, I was given the hits. You know, that's I think there was a big difference of taking hits than giving. So the majority I was giving, but I watch it. It's a very serious situation. Just a friend of mine, Benny Perrin, who played for Alabama, who's one of my teammates, ended up playing 5 years at, for the Cardinals, ended up taking his own life. And the word was is that he was just having so severe headaches and problems that he couldn't take it anymore. So those are the sad stories. But, you know, overall, you know, where it was and where it is now, I'm very happy with the fact that, you know, you're paying attention to it in the NFL, you know, even though they didn't really truly admit they knew about it. But, you know, I was part of that huge lawsuit of 4,200 players that getting involved in it. So the research is still young yet. You know, we're starting to still learning about it. And you know, the CTE is just some really thing, you know, something that happens. It's unfortunate. But it can be devastating and leading to other things like dementia and also ALS, as we saw with Turner
Kevin
from
Turner.
Alabama,
yeah.
who died of ALS. So, you know, the way I look at it is I think the longer you play in the NFL, I think the higher chances that, you know, you might have some damage. But I think with the coaching and the rules now, these younger kids should not, you know, worry about it so much because of the way they're tackling the new technology with helmets. So, you know, I'm happy where it is now. But in the past, you know, it is what it is. We played the way we played. I led with my helmet. I got to tell you that every game, at the end of a game, my face mask was flattened. It started off as round, and it would flatten. And I never could understand. I wasn't too smart during the games. I was like, why does my helmet, like, could spin on my head? Yeah. Is it because I'm sweating? No, it's because I'm hitting people with my face mask and the front of my helmet. And by the end of the game, you know, I needed a new helmet sometimes before second half, definitely for the next game. So it was kind of a challenge there.
And those were bulky, heavy face masks back in the day. But, you know, we used to use terms like, you know, put your face on the ball or head across the beam. And, you know, those were the ways that that it was taught. And the head was certainly part of it. Now, you were never supposed to roll your head. And that's what I hate. I see so many guys rolling their head. Now, I am interested in this new helmet that they've come up with. That's a softer material. And it'll be interesting to see how that works. It's supposed to have some really cool padding inside it as well. We'll see. But it's interesting that you said that about the longer you play, the more years. I'm a firm believer that it is. It's the older players. I think your brain reacts differently when you're 28, 29, 30, 32 than it does when you're younger. We saw the studies that said high school kids are not in danger. We don't see it a ton in college, but the longer you play in the NFL, more hits. I said 2 years ago, and every player I said it to said, no way. What if there were limits? I mean, you could play 4 years in college. What if it was 6 years in the NFL? I mean, if it comes down to killing a sport, what if it came down to where you got 6 years or you get 7 years or let's say 8 years to play six? You know, so if you get injured, that way you get like two redshirt years. But what if they came down at some point in time in the NFL and said, you know what? 8 years to play six. If you're a quarterback, you got 12 years to play 10 and you're out. That's it. You can't play football for 15 years.
Well, I really kind of hate that to see that only because there's other injuries that you could sustain and be able to come back, you know. And
yeah.
If you're only limited to 6 years and you're hurt like two of those 6 years, you're missing out a lot. I hope it doesn't go there. You know, I know that, you know, I think everybody understands the NFL has really paid attention to the fact that, and I think they're overcautious. I always say that the referees should be former players because let me tell you this, if I'm watching a hit from a free safety hitting on a wide receiver, I can tell you whether he's going for his head or not, you know.
Yeah.
And these guys, just because, you know, and we know the situation where, you know, you get, this is called split seconds. Defensive back, the free safety or whatever comes in to go make the hit to the chest and the wide receiver catches the ball and goes down and all of a sudden he hits his helmet and, you know, that's, first thing is, you know, this huge violation and, you know, penalty and suspension and everything else. So, you know, I would be able to tell you right off the bat, and I can't. Did he go for his head? Heck yeah. If he went for his head, son, you're out of the game. I would make sure that. But if it was questionable, you know, which I could easily see, it was just one of those things that happened, you know, I wouldn't penalize him as tough as these guys are. So, But that's the way the league has gone in the NFL and also college. You know, they're really protecting these wide receivers, and they call them, which I don't understand how they call them, defenseless receivers. You know, if you're defenseless, get off the field. I mean, really? I mean, you go up for a ball.
You're always defenseless. Yeah, I mean, they're always – yeah, exactly. I mean, really, they're like, when is a receiver not defenseless? How can he defend? He's reaching for the ball. You're supposed to let him catch it, I guess, and then take him down to the ground, Barry Crosswoods. By the way, you kept the record perfect. Every ex-player that I have said that to, everyone has said the same exact thing. No. They don't want to know anything about career limits. So that you kept that record perfect. All right. We're going to be spending a lot of time during the season talking Alabama. Obviously, they just opened camp today. We've been beaten to death all of the camp battles and things like that. But you also cover the Indianapolis Colts, which are obviously a division rival of the Tennessee Titans. We're a Titans affiliate in this neck of the woods. What is going on with Andrew Luck? Do you suspect that he actually may miss some more play time at the beginning of the year? And are we reaching a critical moment for Andrew Luck here? Because he hasn't been as good as he was with Bruce Arians that first year since then. It almost seems like he's regressed a little bit.
Well, he actually had a pretty good year in 2016, throwing for over 4,200 yards. In 2015, he missed the majority of it because of injuries, but I've always said this because I feel like, you know, he's really an incredibly a great gifted athlete and really a smart guy. He's cut out of the same mold as Peyton Manning. You know, he's just a student of the game and is a phenomenal athlete. But this former general manager that we had just did not protect him with the offensive line. And so he's taken some serious beating over the years. And you're right, it's coming to a critical point. If this new general manager we got, which is Chris Ballard, needs to really focus on protecting Andrew Luck. If you really want him to finally come around to become really, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But it's been tough on him. But you're talking about his injury, his shoulder. He just had it operated on in January. And they're saying that basically he's not going to be ready for training camp, and they're hoping that he'll be ready for the opener. But that's questionable. So that's one of the challenges that has happened over the years is that, you know, those injuries are starting to show up where supposedly, I think last year or the year before, he had actually hurt that shoulder but continued to play with it because he's a tough guy but needed the surgery in January to get it fixed.
Yeah. All right, Barry, I'm looking forward to it, man, this year. We're going to be talking a lot of Bama football, some NFL football. I don't know what day yet. You tell me whatever day works best for you. I mean, I like doing it late in the week, but we'll have plenty to get into, of course, all season long with Barry Krause, and I'm going to drag him to a couple of remotes as well this year. We'll bring him to Huntsville and have some fun with him there as well. Barry, I appreciate you, man.
Man, I'm excited about it. I think Alabama's going to have another great football team opening up with FSU September 2nd. Ooh. And, again, prime time when you talk about Alabama football, when you know they're always in the discussion for the, you know, being the champions, the national champions. So it's going to be a lot of fun working with you. I'm excited about it, and I'll roll tide. I look forward to seeing you.
Some of those guys are madder than a hornet, man, over that one loss, that 1 second. They're just madder than a hornet. I mean, I can't believe the veterans that have come back. How one guy says he watches the game every week. The end of that game and the way it ended in national championship. And they're liable to go scorched earth this year. I mean, as good as they were last year, who knows how they're going to come back this year. But they sure as heck aren't forgetting what happened.
Yeah, and you know who did that was Saban. Right after the game, right, he told the guys, he goes, no, one game defines your career. Guys, remember this, feel this. And their off-season program has been incredible. You know, again, 7 consecutive years that they're number one in recruiting. He does a phenomenal job. But yeah, when you talk to these players, they're still mad and they're hungry. And I really feel bad for FSU because I think they're going to unleash. They've had the whole off-season to really think about, you know, this year. and get after it because they deserve, they feel they deserve to be the best team, and they have to prove it week in and week out.
Well, it's certainly going to be one hell of a challenge. All right, man, appreciate you, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, man, thanks, Tom. Looking forward to it.
All right, thank you, Barry Krause. Stud right there. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back and get an update from T-Mac. It's the Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039. Yep.
Now back to the big dog. Bark, bark.
Jesus, take the wheel. Take it from my hands. Because I can't do this on my own.
This is the one that won her the American Idol, isn't it?
Sorry,
T-Mac, that's the one she won American Idol on, isn't it?
I'm just watching her sing over here, big dog. I don't know.
Oh, see, you got the, you're looking at the YouTube, but I thought you just said audio. That's the one she, I'm telling you right now, that's the one that she won the American Idol on. I'm going to say that.
I'm just
sticking
saying,
to it.
Normally, I do get the just the audio for you, but it was Carrie Underwood Day. I had to have the videos, man. Come on.
I've started a new thing, by the way. You know I'm a uniform geek. I'm starting a new thing. My uni thought of the day. Every day I'm going to put up a uni thought of the day, something having to do with sports, mostly football uniforms. I put up my uni thought of the day. The San Diego, now Los Angeles Chargers, their color rush uniform should be their full-time uniform. It's the only color rush uniform that is worthy of a full-time switch to that uniform. Check it out on my Twitter feed. Let's get an update with T-Mac. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
The Atlanta Braves snapped the Dodgers' 9-game winning streak last night by beating them 5-3 at SunTrust Park. Tyler Flowers' 2-run blast in the 8th was enough to put the Braves past LA. The Dodgers are 20-3 in their last 23 games, and all three losses have come to the Atlanta Braves. They will face off again tonight at SunTrust Park at 6:35 p.m. The Alabama Crimson Tide opens up their fall camp today with the news that they are ranked number 1 in the first preseason coaches poll. Florida and Texas
Shocker.
A&M also open up camp today. The Tide and Gators are 2 of 6 SEC teams to make the top 25. LSU, Auburn, Georgia, and Tennessee round out the rest. Thursday night football is back. The NFL Hall of Fame game between the Cowboys and the Cardinals will take place tonight at the Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio. You can hear that right here on The Ump. Coverage starts at 6:30 p.m. The Nashville Predators' Mike Fisher announces his retirement from the NHL after 17 seasons. The team captain issued his emotional goodbye letter in the Tennessean and on the team's website earlier this morning. The Tennessee Titans wide receiver Corey Davis was reported as injured today with an apparent hamstring injury. Davis was seen headed to the locker room accompanied by team trainers. Other NFL injuries include Ryan Tannehill, who suffered an apparent knee injury when scrambling to get out of bounds. The MRI shows no structural damage for the Dolphins' starting quarterback, and former Crimson Tide long snapper Carson Tinker, who now plays for the Jaguars, has been placed on the IR after tearing his ACL in practice. And finally, some afternoon baseball scores for you. The Diamondbacks are leading the Cubs 4-1 in the top of the 5th. The Mets and Rockies are knotted at 4 in the top of the 9th with 2 outs, and the Brewers beat the Cardinals 2-1. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
First pitch, swinging a fly ball to right field, deep, going back is Puig. That ball is gone! Tyler Flowers puts the Braves in front with a 2-run blast. It's 5-3 Braves on the pinch home run by Tyler Flowers.
I just thought I would put that out there for you to support your update there. Dave, did you mention that DeMarco Murray sat out with a sore hamstring today or no? I didn't know if you mentioned that or not.
No, I did not report that he tweaked his hamstring.
Listen, I don't know if you ever thought of doing this, but a large hole. This is Kentucky, by the way, Dateline, Kentucky. A large hole was discovered next to the tombstone of Emily Howard. And authorities in Kentucky say it was her grandson and his friend who admitted to unearthing her casket in hopes of collecting valuables. Stop digging up grandma! A passerby found Howard's coffin in Stacy Cemetery exposed but still closed. Investigators believe possibly because the would-be thieves were unable to unlock it. When we got here, they had definitely dug up the grave to the top of the vault, and everything was exposed. By the way, the grandkids are 33 and 26 years old. Stop digging up grandmama. If she wanted you to have her jewels, she'd have given them to you. Not how hard up your meth head's got to be to go get digging up grandmama. Fab 5 is next right here on 730-1039.